Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
It is the Brett Winterville Show, News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you this afternoon, and I'm opening the phones early for your reaction, your thoughts, your takes on what it is you saw take place last night. 704-570-1110 later this hour. Breaking Brett Jensen comes by next hour. We'll check in with Dinesh D'Souza, get an update on the 2000 Mules release. Jeffrey Lord will come by. In the 5 o'clock hour, Michael Watley's going to come by. Lots of room for you as well. What a night. What a big night with a lot of energy and some surprises, no doubt. And one of the things that struck me in watching the coverage was you could feel the white knuckling by the press on Messi NBC, MSNBC, on CNN, on ABC, NBC, CBS, on all of those channels. You could see and you could feel the white knuckling because the white knuckling was over the possibility of, okay, is Donald Trump, did he come up short? Is he coming up short? Did he succeed? I don't know. We don't know what direction to go. Are we going to talk about January 6th? Are we going to talk about Buffalo? Are we going to talk about, what are we going to talk about tomorrow? What's the topic going to be? It's got to be Donald Trump related. They don't understand you. They don't understand you at all. They think that you sit at your kitchen table or you drive to and from work every day and all you do is think about Donald Trump. They think that you just drive around embittered and angry. This is what they think. They look their noses down so far at the people here in Carolina, at the people that live in the heartland, at the people that live in the non-coastal elite areas. They think you're rubes. They think you're goofy. They think you're easily manipulated, and they don't even understand the tsunami that is forming when we get to November. Because we were told something that was a provable lie, and we were told that very thing on January the 20th, 2021, at 12 noon on the Capitol steps behind the steel fencing. We were told by this president, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., that he was going to be a president for all the people, that he was going to be a uniter, that he was going to bring the bitter divisions together and heal that divide and all that sort of stuff. And everything that came out of his mouth was a provable lie, was a provable lie. He had no intention of governing with any deference to people who did not vote for him. In fact, the way you know that is the staffing surrounding him, who are all Obama administration retreads. Now, why does that matter? When Donald Trump got elected to the presidency in 2016, I'm going to get into the current era, but there's backstory here. When he got elected in 2016 and took office in 2017, there was a vow made behind the scenes at that White House that they were going to do whatever it took to sabotage not Donald Trump and not even this country, but to sabotage specifically every one of you. They were going to get even with every one of you who voted against Hillary Clinton, who was a proxy for Barack Obama's third term. They knew that you weren't smart. Just ask them. They looked down their noses at you. You embarrass them. You're like the brother-in-law in any of the vacation movies, showing up in a leisure suit. That's how they think of you. And what they figured would happen after 2020 is that you would have learned your lesson and you'd have gone home and you'd have stopped with this politics. You'd have left politics to the professionals like Ron Klain and anybody who's on MSNBC, you'd have left it to the professionals. You don't belong in politics. You belong in being ruled. That's what they thought. And still, in 2020, still, you decided you were going to continue to fight, politically speaking, of course, in the aftermath of the elections. You were remaining committed. You were going to talk about the border. You were going to talk about the economy. You were going to talk about where the COVID-19 really came from. You were going to talk about the tyranny and the mandates and all the lockdowns and all of that. And they kept trying to break you, ladies and gentlemen. They kept trying to break you. They wanted to throw CRT at you. They wanted to throw the federal government at you to grab you because you yelled at a school board. They wanted to break you. They wanted to humiliate you. And you stood strong. And you didn't stand strong for Donald Trump or Mike Pence or Mitch McConnell or Steve Bannon or any of these people that you've seen involved in the body politic for the last 5 or 6 years. You stood strong for your country and for your kids. Your kids who are teenagers or preteens saw a good economy under Trump. They know we have the potential to do it, and they know that this character at 1600 has no idea what he's doing. He thinks raising taxes on corporations is going to fight inflation. Even Jen Psaki ran away. No forwarding phone number. And they figured they'd break you with the lockdowns and your business being hurt and the inflation. They figured you'd finally say, enough, we will do a deal at the border. Enough, we will do what it takes to get on board with climate change. Enough, we don't want to be scared anymore. But like a strong American with resolve, and I'm talking about Americans, I'm not talking Democrats or Republicans, I'm talking about Americans who are on both sides of the fight. Just like Americans, you stand strong. And what did you do? You went out and you voted. You went out and you voted. And the process worked. And oh, by the way, outside of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, you didn't hear about any chicanery, did you, in the primaries? Isn't that great? Because a lot of you got to go vote at the polls instead of having to mail them in. Ladies and gentlemen, the state of our union is strong. The state of our people are resolved. And the state of our moral core is intact and intense. Who's with me? News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Bottom of the hour, we will hear from Breaking Brett Jensen. He'll give us his assessment of last night, what he saw, what he learned, all that good stuff. It is great to be here with you. I want to start off with a clip here. This is going to be cut number 30, James Carville, one of your favorites out there. James Carville says that you Republicans have gotten far, far too radical. It's dangerous. We've only got one election to stop you. We've been hearing that since like the early 1990s, I think, from Jim Carville. Here is James Carville, cut 30.
We're in a very, very difficult time with a major American political party that has just become hypersonic weird, and it has to be stopped. And the only way to stop this is at the ballot box. You're not going to stop it by going and wasting your time demonstrating in front of Justice Kavanaugh or Senator Collins' house. What a waste of time. Washington needs to get out of Washington and go to Michigan and Wisconsin and North Carolina and Pennsylvania and Ohio and Nevada and Arizona, where all these competitive races are taking place. This whole future of the country is going to be decided in November. And the faster we understand that, the better off we're going to be.
So the whole country is going to be decided. The fate of our country, if you people, if you deplorables, if you great unwashed, if you people who want to see the border secured, who want to see a formula on the shelves, who don't want to pay $8 a gallon for gasoline, you need to understand that this is just a terrible series of policies coming from the Republicans. And the Republicans have no control over any of this. I mean, it's just a fact. They just don't have any control over any of this. But people are starting to get really freaky. Do you remember a guy who used to be on the Fox News Channel? Carl Cameron. Carl Cameron, you've seen him a million times. He left in the last 5 or 6 years, but he is somebody who's gone off and started a whole other a media operation. They used to call him Campaign Carl Cameron. He's now saying that people like you who are pushing disinformation in the media, well, you need to be locked up. Cut 34. Oh, we got cut 34 coming here. Let's see. 3, 2. You don't have cut 34? Okay. I will make sure that we get it up for the next segment. Essentially, what he's saying is that the disinformation needs to become criminalized. Here it is.
Republicans have become the purveyors of misinformation. And when our two-party system is broken like that, democracy is seriously in trouble. The president acknowledged that. It's time to actually start doing things and maybe taking some names and putting people in jail.
Maybe taking some names and putting people in jail because of his declaration that you're pushing misinformation. The single greatest generator of misinformation, as I go to quote Rand Paul, is the United States government, period, end of discussion. The greatest purveyor of misinformation is the federal government. When's the last time that you actually knew what was going on with the Federal Reserve? When was the last time that you actually knew what was in the black budgets for our military and our super secret operations? When was the last time you actually got to see an audit of said Fed? When was the last time that you got to know how much money is actually in Social Security? How insolvent are federal programs? Is the federal government really spying on you? What about the cozy relationship between the World Health Organization and the Biden administration via Tony Fauci? You want to talk about misinformation? I mean, they've got so much misinformation, they're going to declare her the champion of the Miss America contest. Oh, forget Washington, D.C., Miss New York, Miss Pennsylvania. It's going to be misinformation, and she's going to be wearing a Joe Biden mask over her face. The fact of the matter is, a journalist, quote-unquote, air quotes, saying that you need to lock people in jail because you think they're purveying misinformation. You understand, Carl, that cuts both ways. You understand that we could go back retroactively and lock up everybody who talked about the Russian collusion nonsense. By the way, I'm still not really talking about the Durham investigation because I think it's a huge distraction. There is a lot more important stuff that you need to know about. Here's an example. It's cut number 36. It's labeled as the GAF. G-A-F. Cut number 36. In the run. You got it? Okay. I'm going to let you hear a little bit of this. I made a video before the show, and I put the video up over at my Facebook page because it's about a 3.5-minute run, and I'm not going to play the whole thing for you here. So you can go over to Brett Witterbull Show Facebook page, and you can look at the entire video. But this is what I think the priorities need to be for us with an eye towards November and beyond Cut 36.
And I think it's three letters, G-A-F, GAF. Right, GAF. And here's what the GAF is, okay? Gas and formula. Gas and formula. Those are the two most important issues right now in the United States of America. I know there are a lot of people that want to talk about the World Health Organization meeting, and I'm going to take a deep dive on that on my show today. But it is gas and formula. The American people are starting to come to a demoralizing reality. And what that reality is the standard of living is sliding, and it's sliding fast.
That's what it comes down to, folks. It comes down to the thing that you can reach out and touch, the empty shelves in the market, the inability to purchase the amount of gasoline that you need to get to and from work and school and all the other things that you have come to accept as normal American life, the expensive diesel that is going to stop you from being able to shop at the supermarkets. Gas, and formula. It's super easy to understand. We need to be beating that empty canister as long as we can. Brett Jensen comes by next. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, Brett Witterbull Show. 704-570-1110. Breaking, Brett Jensen joins us now. After a very long night last night, chasing all the stories around Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, and beyond, it's good to have you back, my friend.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
So what is your key takeaway from what you saw take place? Let's start at the local level. Let's start at the city council, where we saw somebody who was a rising star once upon a time, then fell back to earth and then tried to become a rising star again, coming up short. Tell us your assessment of what happened at the city council.
So there were two main things that I took away from it. It was always going to be difficult for Larkin to get that fourth spot. Larkin Eggleston, who was, could have easily won if he had stayed within his district, would have, won a third term easily, mm-hmm. but chose to run for an at-large and lost. And it really wasn't that close. And so that didn't surprise me. But what did surprise me is that LaWanna Mayfield mm-hmm. finished third. And in 2019, she got trounced. When she left her district and went for at-large, she got trounced. And, LaWanna Mayfield is the one who said that, police officers are nothing more than terrorists in blue uniforms and believe that 9/11 was a conspiracy and an inside job and had nothing to do with the Arabs and, or the Taliban. And so, but the fact that she finished third, but Patrick Cannon finishing dead last, a lot of the Democrats all believed, that he was going to finish in the top three. But then talking to other people late last night, someone brought up a very good point. When you have almost as many independents as you do Democrats and Republicans voting,
right,
and two-thirds of the independents voted in the Democrat primary, two-thirds. Yes, Patrick Cannon got the Democrat vote, but he didn't get any of the independent vote. Because the independents were still really upset about them. It wasn't about, I'm always just going to vote, and pull the Democrat lever and walk out of the booth. It was like the independents generally pick the candidate, not the party. And they clearly did not want him as a candidate. And therefore, he finished dead last in the city council. And you would, never say that someone's career is over. But, he's not a very young man anymore. He's late 50s, early 60s, whatever he is. And so,
right.
You would think that it would be very, very difficult to ever get back in the political world just because of the way this one turned out.
In terms of the pathway forward, and I'm talking about the election that's coming up, that'll come up during the summer, and then, of course, into the next cycle that'll come up. You were sort of talking a little bit about Braxton Winston last night and the fact that he seems to be pretty serious about positioning himself for the mayoralty, correct?
Yeah, I mean, whether it's in 2 years or 4 years, mm-hmm. whatever, yes, his ultimate goal is to be mayor of Charlotte. And then, look, he may have greater aspirations as congressman,
sure.
or whatever, but his immediate goal is mayor of Charlotte. And he's going to get the most votes in July, most likely. It's
right.
fully expected. And that generally means he'll be named mayor pro tem.
Well, the reason I bring that up is the very last question I asked you, we were doing coverage last night from 10 to 11. And the very last question I asked you was to assess sort of the direction of the governance here in Charlotte. And you closed it out by saying it's the council and that sort of movement has taken this council very far left.
Well, and it's really up to the three brand new members that are joining the districts, not the at-large members, because we all already know who the at-large members are.
Right.
And now you're bringing in LaWanna, who is very hardcore radical left.
Right.
Very radical left. You're bringing her in as an at-large, assuming that she wins in the general election on July 26th. But it's the three new people that it's going to determine how hard left this city council actually goes. We already know it's pretty far left because of all the millennials and everything else. But outside of that, if you're losing Larkin Eggleston, who's center left, and you've lost, Patrick Cannon, who many people thought was going to get elected, he's center left. You start losing those people, and now you're bringing in even more left, young, hard, radical left. That's going to really, really steer this city council very, very quickly and sharply to the left. And I, talking to Democrats last night at the Democrat parties, that was a very big concern.
So as you come out from Charlotte, as you come out from Mecklenburg County, and you look at the landscape in front of us here, what is something that you've got your eye on? Obviously, Madison Cawthorn is not going to be in the Congress after this cycle. Obviously, you're going to have the battle between Ted Budd and Sherry Beasley. But what about this area that you're noting in terms of change and in terms of political direction? You mentioned, obviously, people who don't want to be affiliated. That's a substantial turn. But what's your assessment of the way that's all looking?
You know, there are a couple of things. You know, the first thing was that, you know, just because he got the Trump seal of approval, didn't matter to Madison Cawthorn. Didn't matter at all. But the Trump seal of approval certainly helped Ted Budd. Mm-hmm. And so, so what that tells me is that it's going to be a candidate by candidate situation on whether or not the Trump endorsement helps. And here locally, you know, Jeff Jackson, who's running for District 14, 30% of that district is in Gaston County, 70% is in Southwest Mecklenburg County, Steel Creek. And, you know, a lot of people think it's just going to be a foregone conclusion that it's going to be a layup for Jeff Jackson. But when you look at that district, if you break it down, Tillis, even though it's a very heavily, you know, it can be very heavily independent area, if you look at strictly at that district, Tom Tillis won that district. If it were a district then like it was now. So Tom Tillis actually won that during the voting, but Trump lost that district. So I don't think that's a guaranteed 100% lock for Jeff Jackson to win that district, even though much of it is in Southwest Mecklenburg County, which is generally a Democrat viable, because you've got 30%, which is Gaston County, which is all Republican.
Yeah.
So much like Union County. So that, I think that I really, the fact that Trump lost that district, but Tillis won that district, tells you a lot. And I think that could mean that area right here could be a lot closer than people think.
All right, he's Breaking Brett Jensen. Follow him on Twitter, Brett_Jensen. Appreciate you coming by, my friend.
Anytime, Brett. I appreciate it.
You got it. That's Brett Jensen. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Dow is down 1,206 points, 1,208 points, 1,216 points, 1,224. This thing is going down, 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 down. It's alarming, especially if you've got money in the market. 704-570-1110 is the phone number. Let me take this call. U-Haul is what it says here. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I was wanting to find out, Brett. Let me ask you, do you know any poor white folks?
Do I know poor white folks?
Yeah,
I think I know a few.
Okay, so I was trying to figure out, why does poor white folks vote in the Republican Party? Because the Republican Party has no agenda for poor folks. So why does the people that you know that's poor, are they Republicans?
Yeah.
Okay, so why do they vote Republican?
Because it's a number of things, right? You've got a party that's pro-life. You've got a party that is supporting border security. Unfortunately, with a wide open border, you've got earnings eroded by people who will come in and will work for less than the minimum wage. You know, there's a lot of different reasons. Second Amendment rights, the protection of your Fourth Amendment rights. I mean, there's a number of things. Strong defense, not surrendering to the Taliban. You know,
but the most important thing is economics for the American poor person.
I don't know. A lot of people are poor, and then they vote Republican, and they may not see. This is the crazy thing about it. Right? I mean, and I guess the way I would explain it is this: when you are born, you have nothing. Right. Everybody just comes into this world. You have nothing. Nobody has anything. Right. And then as you get through life, you will find yourself moving in a given direction.
That premise is wrong. That premise is wrong.
OK, I'll accept that. But when you are born, you don't own a car. You don't own a house. You don't own any of that. You're raised. And then at some point you have to get out there in the world and try to make it on your own. I think that's pretty much established, unless you know that there are infants that are born that are driving around in Ferraris. But that's a foolish premise. Right. So during life, People who are poor don't necessarily always stay poor. People who are rich don't always necessarily stay rich. People move through a lot of different phases. I'll give you an example. Ben Carson was born in abject poverty, became a brain surgeon. I'll give you another example. Ryan Leaf was a number two pick in the NFL, crashed, became a drug addict, and lost everything, and then had to build it back up. So life and your condition in life is not determined by your political party. Life is a constantly changing reality for people.
Yeah, of course. But that answers your question.
Why do poor white people vote Republican? It's right. For a number of reasons. For the same reason why rich black people vote Democrat, or poor black people vote Democrat, or poor black people vote Republican. I mean, it's a lot of different reasons.
I'm on the spectrum of a poor person, so I know that I haven't seen anything that the Republicans, as far as economics are concerned, do for poor people.
Okay, so why are you voting for Democrats?
Well, because they try to do things for poor people.
They try, but like, what have they done for you? How old are you?
Oh, I'm 54.
You're 54, and you're on the lower income, let's say, right?
Oh yeah, I'm lower.
How long have you been voting for Democrats?
Well, all my life.
Well, maybe you should change it up a little bit, because they've apparently not delivered for you.
Well, yeah, but you know what? And that's a good point. But the thing about it is, okay, so now there's a little difference between the working poor and the real destitute. And so I'm just wondering, there's programs out there for people pushed by the Democratic Party that help those folks out.
Sure. But they're not just for when you vote Democrat or you vote Republican, you don't get to take advantage of programs just because a Democrat put it in a Republican. A Republican can put in a program that can benefit you. A Democrat can put in a program that benefits me. And so, the reality is you're never going to get everything that you want other than by your own toil and work.
Oh, of course. That's correct. I give you that one.
Yeah.
And that's definitely correct. And I'm independent. I will vote Republican or Democrat. I'll vote for the person who comes up with the best policy.
I say this all the time. I know what my politics are, and I know how I vote. And the fact of the matter is, no politician pays my rent, pays my food bill, or any of that sort of stuff. So I'm not beholden to a party. I'm beholden to making the choice that's right for me, my family. And it might be one way this year, and it may be something else next year. I mean, it all depends. I would hope people wouldn't be locked into the constant rabbit wheel, I mean, that's
right,
it.
Right.
I always like talking to you, man.
Hey, if I could say one other thing.
Go ahead.
For Governor McCrory.
Yes, sir.
I think where he messed up is he tried to go to the far right opposed to being the centrist Republican that he's always been.
I think that's a fair point. I'm going to try to get him on at some point, have him break it down for us. You call me back anytime. I appreciate you being out there, buddy.
All right, thank you, man.
Take care. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you today. 704-570-1110 is the phone number to be a part of the conversation. And I'm happy to welcome back to the program. It's somebody whose work I greatly admire. We had him on a couple of weeks ago. You know him from his amazing new documentary, 2,000 Mules. He is Dinesh D'Souza, and he joins us now. Dinesh, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks very much. Thanks for having me back on.
You've had a great deal of success with the documentary so far, despite the fact that I know, as well as you do, that there are people in the media that just don't want to hear about it, don't want to talk about it. Well, we're talking about it, and you're talking about it. Talk a little bit about the success you've seen so far.
Yeah, the left sort of unleashed their, team of fact checkers, and these are like 20 and 30-somethings, and they came wandering onto the battlefield, and their basic mission was stop this movie from getting any attention. And so they did their kind of bogus fact-checking. But the problem was that they knew nothing about geo-tracking, and they knew nothing about election laws, which are complex because they vary from state to state. So these guys came out and was going to say things like, geo-tracking is really inaccurate, and then everybody realized these people are idiots. And so the left is, that did not succeed, and the movie is sort of broken out now, and so the left now has to call in its A team, which is the New York Times, the Washington Post, and they're doing that, but they're not going to fare any better than the earlier group.
And look, the fact of the matter is you've had a great success in that initial release, and then you took it over to Rumble, you had it over at Rumble, and now you've got big news. You're heading out into theaters. What's going on with this, Dinesh?
Right. I mean, I basically initially only opened the movie for two theatrical showings, May 2nd and May 4th, but we really filled the theaters. We rented out the theaters, sold tickets, and filled them. And then the theaters started coming to us, and they're like, we want this movie. Let's open it normal. So this weekend, May 20th, in 400 theaters, the movie opens normal, which means it's four showings a day. You can buy your tickets on Fandango, any of the other normal ticketing sites. But I say, you know, go to the movie website, which is just 2000mules.com. Click on the tickets. It'll take you to Fandango. Put in your zip code, and then it'll tell you the theater near you. Buy your tickets and go with your family or take your, you know, book club or your conservative or Republican group. Because if we do well in the theater this weekend, we'll be in even more theaters next weekend.
You know, this is so interesting. Now, do you think that you've had a prophylactic fix here in terms of any chicanery going on during the primaries? People are starting to be aware of the methods and the means by which these efforts were made with these drop boxes. Do you think that this is having a sort of a protective effect?
Well, for sure. I mean, look, number one, there's no excuse not to have 24-hour surveillance on every drop box. In fact, that is called for right now in the election laws. It's just that a lot of states, including Wisconsin, you know, just ignored it. They just said we'll do it, and they just pleaded COVID. Oh, we didn't get around to it. But there's no excuse. I mean, every mall, every parking lot, every Home Depot, every ATM has surveillance. So why can't you have surveillance on the drop boxes? And I think if, quite frankly, if they don't do it, you're going to find ordinary citizens driving up in their truck and turning on their phone camera to make sure no hanky-panky is going on at the drop box.
Yeah, absolutely. A final question for you, Dinesh D'Souza, joining us at 2000mules.com. Let me ask you this. Any takeaways from what you saw taking place in these elections overnight, these primaries? Do you have an eye on a particular state? I'm guessing Pennsylvania may be on your radar. What are you thinking as we start to consider these primary fights?
Well, I'll just make the broader point. I think a massive transformation is underway in the Republican Party. But by and large, the old kind of Republican way of doing things, you know, is being displaced by a more activist Republican Party. Now, the left is saying, oh, these election deniers are coming to the fore. No, they're not election deniers. These are people raising legitimate questions about the election that you've tried to suppress and you can't suppress anymore. And that's why you're mad.
You know, it's very true. In fact, I note that the candidate that they don't seem to want to run for governor in the Pennsylvania Commonwealth came out very early on last night and announced for everybody no more jab mandates, no more mandates to get jobs, none of that sort of stuff. We're going to go back to celebrating freedom and liberty, and I think that's a good message.
Well, especially in a state that has the Liberty Bell, right? I mean, also exactly. Philadelphia is notorious for election fraud.
Yes.
I mean, there's more mules in Pennsylvania than probably any other state. So that state really needs to be cleaned up.
Yeah, without a doubt. Where do people go to get the tickets, to get information about 2,000 Mules?
There are four or five ways to watch the movie. Just go to 2000mules.com. So it's the number 2000mules.com. You can buy DVDs. You can actually stream the movie and watch it. Or you can get your tickets and go see it in the theater this weekend.
Can't wait to see the growth beyond this coming weekend. Dinesh, all the best. Look forward to speaking with you again, my friend.
Thank you very much.
You've got it. That's Dinesh D'Souza, 2000mules.com. Let me grab this call real fast. I want to talk to Tracy. Hey, Tracy, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Brett.
No, you're very welcome. What's on your mind?
I just wanted the gentleman who called and was wondering why poor white people would vote Republican.
Yes.
So I'm a poor white people, and I just wanted to say I agree with all the reasons you said.
Mm-hmm.
Along with there is a certain amount of personal responsibility for not living above your means.
Sure.
You know, I feel like there's policies and, you know, ways for people to get help, no matter if they're Democrat or Republican.
That's right.
But I just personally feel like the Democrat Party seems to want people to be dependent on government.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't feel like I want to do that. I don't know if that's too much pride or I don't know.
No, look, I think it's your sense of things, right? And the reality is, people who don't come from means or who come from a poor background or any of that sort of stuff, that doesn't negate their worth and their value and their importance. You want me to give you a little fact of the day today, Tracy? I think you'll like this. Okay. Today in history, today, May 18th, 1860, Abraham Lincoln nominated for the presidency at the Republican Convention. That is a guy who came from total poverty. And he became one of the greatest presidents and freed more people than any other president until you get to World War II and the liberation of Europe and Japan. But my gosh, these people that want to write off the idea of, well, you're poor, you're this, you're that. It's not what measures your worth. Your humanity is what measures your worth.
Yeah. And if I could just say one more thing,
sure.
to hopefully take the race issue out of it for that previous caller.
Yes.
It's funny because a coworker who I'm only saying the color of his skin because it's pertinent.
Okay.
He was a black guy.
Mm-hmm.
We both make less than $27,000 a year. And 10 years ago, he's the one who explained to me that Republicans, I was of the same mindset. I thought Republicans were for rich people
mm-hmm.
and Democrats were for the poor people. And he's the one who explained it to me. And that's when I switched over. So just again, I don't think it's a matter of the color of your skin or what party. It's a matter of just, you know, nothing's holding us back in this country. If you're willing to go for it and put the work into it and not live beyond your means.
That's right.
It's doable.
Absolutely. Beauty and smarts are more than skin deep, and that's what it comes down to. Tracy, you're a great call. In fact, you know what you are? You're our call of the day. I appreciate you calling in, and please call me again.
Hello. Am I on?
Hi.
You've just heard the call of the day, brought to you by High Performance Real Estate Advisors.
Be good, Tracy. I appreciate you. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. One of the most important races taking place last night was the fight for the Senate seat in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and I can think of nobody better to talk to about this than Jeffrey Lord. You know him from his terrific books and his writing at the American Spectator and thejeffreylord.com and all those great sites. Jeff Lord, good to have you back, my friend.
Hello, my friend. Speaking to you from Battleground Central.
It sure is. Are you kidding? This is the state that's got the most fights that I can recall in terms of really, really battling out. And I know you were probably kept up quite late last night watching these returns. What's the state of the battle there now between McCormick and of course Dr. Oz, and then you have Kathy Barnett.
Kathy is out.
Okay.
No question. She's not going to be there. But the question with Dr. Oz and McCormick, they are separated the last I checked, and this could have changed. I mean, things are changing so fast.
Sure.
It's incredible. The last I checked, they were separated by about 2,500 votes.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And there are, and you got to love this story. Not far from me is Lancaster County,
mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania, where I went to college, Franklin and Marshall College. Lancaster County is a fairly good-sized county, but it is also seriously Republican. Okay, great. So prime target for anybody running in a Republican primary, particularly all of these candidates. What happened yesterday, Election Day? They want to send in, people have sent in mail-in ballots.
Uh-huh.
Well, the company that produced the ballots put the wrong stamp or seal on it so that when the elected officials who run the election process went to scan the ballots, they wouldn't scan.
Oh, my gosh.
To the tune of about 21,000 ballots.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is a problem, and these things have to be now hand-counted
mm-hmm.
and fixed in some fashion. They're in the process of doing that, and as a matter of fact, I saw another story that the count was up to 33,000 ballots.
Holy cow.
So imagine that. I mean, you got 20, whatever the number would be, 21,000, 33,000, and these two candidates are separated by about 2,500.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. So there is no answer yet. And I'm not sure whether we'll have an answer by midnight or tomorrow or the next night or the next night.
And it's interesting because the complicating factor in that race isn't just the Oz v. McCormick. It's actually on the Democrat side. The lieutenant governor is in the hospital. He'll be released, I'm guessing, at some point. But he's not even able to really go out there and take like a victory lap or campaign at this point, right?
Well, he couldn't go to his own victory party. His wife went instead. And what happened? I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of him. He is a really big guy.
Yes.
When I say big, I mean he's like 6'8", 9", something like that.
This is Fetterman, right?
Out of the blue, he had a stroke on Friday. Well, so they get him in the hospital pronto, and it turns out that there was a clot, and he has AFib, and he needed a pacemaker. So they operated successfully, thankfully. And interestingly, Dr. Oz called and offered to help because he is a heart doctor.
Sure.
They got the clot out and they put the pacemaker in. And I suspect he's home at this point. I'm not sure. He may still be in the hospital. But he is going to recover and be back on the campaign trail. But suffice to say, that threw a monkey wrench into things.
Oh, no doubt. And I did see his wife, the second lady of the state, making the rounds this morning, you know, doing interviews and things like that. Obviously, we wish him a speedy recovery. We want to see the battle royale that's going to be coming down. Let me pivot you over, though, to the thing that got the most ink outside of Pennsylvania. Dr. Oz, obviously important. But this Doug Mastriano versus Josh Shapiro case, this looks like it's going to be a really brutal fight. It looks to me like it's going to be a relitigation of 2020. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. The thing with Doug Mastriano, he is a state senator from, I think it's nearby, I don't know whether it's Franklin or Lebanon County, which is on the other side of the Susquehanna River from me here, not all that far from here, which is a conservative area of Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. He is also a thoroughgoing Trump supporter. And in the wake of the 2020 election, he was a chairman of a committee that was charged with investigating the election, and became the president. President Trump became a fast fan of his without question. And it's interesting to me, he has picked up the same sort of Trumpian base of support. I had to go out to Western Pennsylvania about a month ago to give a speech. And, you know, it's sort of rural along the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
Sure.
And I look off to my right, and there's a massive trailer from a trailer truck unhitched from the truck itself with a big Trump sign on it. And next to it was a Mastriano sign, which in its own way symbolizes what's going on here. So with President Trump's endorsement, he just ran away with this governor's race. There's just no a question. There were a lot of candidates in the race. There were candidates, I think we were finally down to 5 or 6 on the Senate side, but there were as many as 8. At some point, I moderated a governor's debate and 2 U.S. Senate debates, and boy, we had a lot of governor candidates. At one point in one of the debates, not one that I moderated, there were so many governor candidates that they had to split the panels in 2, and the first, like, 6 came out, did the debate for an hour, and then they left the stage, and then the other came out and did it. But out of all that, Doug has emerged, and yeah, you bet, this is going to be a real throwdown, without doubt.
It was interesting.
Basically, the political establishment of Shapiro. Shapiro, I don't know him. He may be a nice enough guy.
Yeah.
But what he is a young career politician. This is all he's done in life.
Right.
You know exactly the kind of type of person I'm
speaking
of.
Oh, yeah.
Mastriano, on the other hand, was career military for a long time and is out and about with all of that, decidedly not a career politician. So whichever way the wind blows on this, we will see.
Indeed. Jeffrey Lord, I know we'll be talking a lot as things heat up as we get closer to clarity and election day, no doubt. I so appreciate you coming by on the program and maybe hit the hay a little early tonight, my friend.
You bet. And I would just close by saying that Pennsylvanians don't call this the Keystone State for nothing.
Ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth? Jeff Lord, be well, my friend. Good talking to you.
All right. Thanks, Brett. Yep. Bye-bye.
Take care. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. All right, so I asked Brett Jensen this question earlier in the day, and I want to ask you this question. Whatever your key takeaway was from the elections last night, what are you worried about? What are you looking forward to? What are you happy is finally moving off the spectrum? And what I mean by that is, you know, how do you feel about what happened with Madison Cawthorn? Do you feel like, okay, get this guy out of here. He's been on the stage too long. We don't like the direction that has gone. Or are you saying, look, they did him in. They did him in because he was speaking too frankly about this stuff that was going on in Washington, D.C. I actually heard people raising that issue with Pete Callender earlier today, and I thought he was doing a great job breaking that down. So if you want to weigh in on any of the election results, please feel free to do it. But there's a lot of other stuff in addition to that that I want to kind of go through and take a look at. So just consider that an open invitation if you want to comment, you want to break this stuff down with me. Next hour, we're going to have Michael Whatley coming by. We're also going to have Bo Thompson, Mark Garrison. We got plenty more straight ahead. So let's go to a big win. I'm going to give you a big win, and then I'm going to give you a reason to panic, okay? The big win. How about the end of the Ministry of Truth there in Washington, D.C.? Remember the Ministry of Truth? Remember the one they call online Scary Poppins? Have you seen that? The Scary Poppins where she was singing the songs? Dear Leader, Biden's Ministry of Truth has been paused, which means it's dead in government. Doublespeak, our friend J.D. Rucker with this piece. The Disinformation Governance Board was able to last longer than Anthony Scaramucci's career as White House press secretary, but not by much. According to the Washington Post, it has been paused. Paused. And you know what paused means when you're in government. Matt Gaetz knows what it means. He's saying, has it been killed? Has it been paused? This thing is not going to happen the way it did. Just 3 weeks after its announcement, the Disinformation Governance Board is being paused. Is being paused, according to multiple employees at the DHS, capping a back and forth week of decisions that changed during the course of reporting on the story. On Monday, DHS decided to shut down the board, according to multiple people with knowledge of the situation. By Tuesday morning, Jankowicz had drafted a resignation letter in response to the board's dissolution. But Tuesday night, Jankowicz was pulled into an urgent call with DHS officials, who gave her the choice to stay on even as the department's work was put on hold because of the backlash it faced, according to multiple people with knowledge of the call. Working groups within DHS focused on mis, dis, and mal information. Only a government agency would say mis, dis, and mal information. TJ, I've been reading some of the output here, you know, on the grid we have. We need more mal. We need a little bit less miss. No, we need a little bit less dis and a little bit more miss. All right. So that's it. So we got the miss, dis, mal. Wait a minute. Do you know that if I say miss, dis, mal, I'm actually saying miss dismal? Like, that's an award you wouldn't want to win, Ms. Dismal. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Dismal. Nina Jankowicz has been subjected to unjustified and vile personal attacks and physical threats, said the DHS spokesperson to the Post. In congressional hearings and in media interviews, the secretary often repeatedly defended her as eminently qualified and so underscored the importance of the department's disinformation work and will continue to do so. So, it's over. It's over, we think, until it just shows up and we go, hey, wait a minute. Didn't that thing get killed off? Didn't that thing go away? To be continued. Billy, welcome to the program.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Hey, I got a couple comments to make. The first one, you know, I get so irritated when I hear commentators on TV or the radio say, oh, the American people are smart. They know what's going on. I'm sorry. The American people are dumb. They don't understand basic economics.
Uh-huh.
They don't understand what's going on in the world and how it affects us. They don't understand the border situation. I really think that society, especially the younger people, and I mean younger, probably 35 and younger, are clueless. They're living in their little bubble and not think they're affected. I'm surprised that there's not more outcry about the price of gas. I mean, this is just
for sure.
Crazy.
I don't think that's a measure of dumbness.
Well, ignorance then.
But I don't think it's even that, because I think deep down inside, anybody you could stop in the street, if you asked about the baby formula shortage, is going to be outraged about that. I think if you ask anybody about, hey, what do you think of gasoline going to $6.20 a gallon, which is what the big bankers are presuming, I think they would be outraged about that. If you say, what about a million people who have crossed the border, I think they'd be out. I think people would genuinely be outraged about all of those things.
I don't think so. It just, like, you know, a few years ago, what was it? You know, well, actually before COVID,
mm-hmm.
everybody wants to go after Big Pharma. Go after Big Pharma.
That's right.
I mean, if I was them, I would say, we don't want to produce any more vaccines. Screw you. Government, you do it. You know, I mean, it's like there is no win. There is nothing as far as a business that can do a business and without government intrusion.
Well, that's true.
People are realizing it. I mean, I want everybody to make $100 an hour, but I'm smart enough to realize that burger's not going to cost $2.50.
Well, that's true.
But most people don't.
Yeah, but hold on a second. This is not a function of dumbness, right? This is a function of, okay, are you retired or are you employed? Are you currently employed with a job?
I'm retired.
You're retired. Okay. Okay, so you're retired, but there was a time in which you were working your job, and you were doing the job that you were doing, and you were coming home at night, eating dinner with the family, maybe watching some TV, going to bed, rinse, repeat. Right? I mean, that was basically what you were doing. That's what everybody does. So you and I are acutely attuned to this because I'm in this field, and you're in the field of thinking these thoughts because you've had an experienced life, and you're concerned about the country. But by and large, people are like, hey, I got to get 20 minutes with my kid tonight. I got to get them to the soccer game. I got to do this. I got to do that. I don't think they're dumb. I think people are just really pedaling hard to keep up with stuff. Now, here's the thing. I think that what we're seeing, especially if you're a 35-year-old or even a 25-year-old, you're well old enough to remember what it was like, say, 4 years ago, what the economy looked like 4 years ago versus now. And I think people are starting to realize, holy cow, this is a dumpster fire. And I think that's the hardest lesson you can learn, but they're learning it now, Billy. I think that's a big deal.
It's going to take a while for it to
sure it is.
In. Like,
sure
you know,
it is.
I have a child that is she's a nurse. I mean, she's smart. And we were talking about Putin, and I said how this could lead to another, you know, Nagasaki.
Yes.
And she goes, what's that?
What's Nagasaki?
And I'm going, she didn't even realize that we dropped the bomb. And, you know, this is not a dumb kid. It's like, what do you learn in school? I mean, I don't understand.
I get it. But again, it's like, what's in front of you? Your people are paying attention about trying to. She's probably worried about her job or COVID or this or that. Nagasaki is something very much in the past. But I think if you said to her, hey, you know, he's got nukes. He could nuke us. I think she'd know immediately what you mean. I mean, I think it's just a matter of the relatability. Billy, you're a great caller, man. I appreciate you being out there. Please call me again. I'm up against it. They're waving me. They're going to throw me out of the room. You know how that goes. They're going to take me in that other room with Boomer Von Cannon.
you don't want to be in here.
He's going to wag the finger at me.
Off you go.
News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, Brett Witterbull Show. I want to grab this call real quick. Dave is up next. Hey, Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, Brett. It's an honor to talk to you, sir. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for answering. I just wanted to make a comment. A few minutes ago, you were talking to a previous caller about how the younger generation now of voters, they're able to remember how well they were doing just a few years ago.
Yes.
And that's going to affect the voting in the polls.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to keep in mind that they also are just now coming to terms with the fact that politicians lie. You know, we've got a whole generation now, what is it, the millennials, where the presidential nominees were saying, oh, I'm going to forgive your student debt. Here we are 2 years later, they're not doing it. They're getting a little upset.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Here's the thing, though. They know politicians lie. If you're a millennial, that means you're like 30. What is a millennial, like 37? The top end is 37, 38.
I don't know. I'm 40? Gen X. What comes after millennial? What's the next?
Gen Z. You've got Gen Z. So those are like your early 20s kids.
Okay, so they're just now figuring out that, wait a minute, you lied to me and I voted for you?
Well, except here's the thing. That's the group that you want. I have teenagers. Okay, I have a college teenager and I have a high school teenager, and I'm telling you, I'm around these kids that they're around with, and they remind me in a lot of ways of the Gen X crowd. They have a little bit more cynicism properly attached to them, okay, where they look at stuff and they're like, okay, hold on, you're totally lying to me. I'm Googling what you just said to me right now, and it says that didn't happen, you know, whatever it is. And so, right. And so that's a big deal, okay? You think about like a Gen Z kid. They would have seen the mortgage meltdown, or at least remember the emotions attached to that, right? Where people were panicked. Am I losing my job? Are we losing our house? Then they saw the morass that was the Obama years, economically speaking. That was a terrible economic time. We were just kind of flatlined. We didn't really grow or anything. Then you see the explosion from 2017 to 2021. And now you see sort of a return to the Obama years. It was just a morass.
Well, my older kids are exactly at the point what you're talking about right now. My youngest is 18.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 years ago, during the meltdown, he doesn't really remember that. He was 10.
Sure.
Okay. So the older kids are all looking at me going, you know, okay, whatever. And my youngest kid is going, well, Joe Biden said, and I, yeah, all right. And I'm, you know, how do you argue with an 18-year-old? You just say, okay, Google it, buddy.
Yeah, well, that's true. But here's the key thing, okay? These kids, these young people, they will understand that that they will, no, at some point it's going to happen. They will understand. Look, I'm old enough to remember when Bill Clinton was running in 92. Okay, so
you mean when he voted against gay marriage, when he opposed gay marriage, that Bill Clinton?
Yeah, but here's the point. I remember also Dukakis in 88, and I remember what happened in 88, and how that was a knockdown drag out fight. You end up with George H.W. Bush, and then you end up with Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton comes in and declares, what does he declare? He declares there's a peace dividend now because we don't have the Soviet Union anymore. We're going to reduce the size of the military. We're going to cut all this stuff. It's going to be really great. We're going to spend money on a bunch of other stuff. And that period of perceived economic growth was capped off after you get through impeachment with what? September 11th. Okay, September 11th. And that moment, that September 11th moment was the thing that woke a lot of people up, especially Gen X people who were kind of floating around and just kind of living life. Gen X woke up in a big way on September the 11th because they said, this is a really dangerous world that we're living in and they're trying to kill us. And what I'm saying is COVID and 9/11 are very similar in the scar that it's leaving in the national psyche. And I think what kids are seeing now, because your kid's 18, that means he was 15, 16 when the COVID was really rocking and rolling.
Right.
He now understands that all the government did, all the politicians did was lie when they said, once this COVID is gone, we're going to be fine. We're not going to be fine. $6.20 a gallon, no baby formula, the border's wide open, kids that they know are taking fentanyl. This is a really bad time. You've got a mental health crisis going on because of what they did with the lockdowns. I think this life experience is going to stick with them. In many ways, Gen Z looks a lot like the Depression era children who grew up in the Depression and then ended up liberating in World War II.
I think I'm going to agree with you there.
I
never quite looked at it that way, but yeah, you made a lot of good points. I appreciate talking to you.
Anytime, Dave. You call back anytime. You're a great caller, and I'm not just saying that because you agree with me. I love talking to people who have big ideas, agree or disagree. I like to have the conversation. It's really something I enjoy. You're going to enjoy this next hour. We've got great stuff straight ahead. I'm not kidding. Bo Thompson comes by. Michael Whatley comes by. Mark Garrison's going to tell us what's coming up on Charlotte at 6. Boomer's going to give you traffic. Anna's going to give you what's going on in the headlines. We got so much. You're welcome. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 to 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you, 704-570-1110. All right, this is a big story, and it's one that I've been meaning to get to for a couple of days. It's a huge story. So the World Health Organization is gathering together for the 75th World Health Assembly, May 22nd to the 28th in 2022. Right, so we're coming up here in 3 days. The 75th World Health Organization Assembly will convene at the United Nations headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland, with delegates from 194 nations to vote on the Biden administration's amendments that will hand over some measure of national sovereignty and authority to the World Health Organization. On January 18th, 2022, the officials from the Biden administration sent the World Health Organization extensive amendments without an official statement or a single press conference. These proposed amendments are written to strengthen the organization's ability to unilaterally intervene in the affairs of nations merely suspected of having, quote, a health emergency of possible concern to other nations. If these amendments are approved, the World Health Organization will have the power to declare an international health emergency, nullifying the powers of nation states. The U.S. amendments delete a critical existing restriction in the regulations. Quote, WHO shall consult with and attempt to obtain verification from the state party in whose territory the event is allegedly occurring. This enables the Director General to declare health emergencies at will and can be used to justify, well, pretty much anything. So instead of coming to the United States and saying, hey, we understand that you have an outbreak of malaria. I'm just going to pick something. Or COVID-19. You have an outbreak of COVID-22. Okay. Well, whatever it is. Rather than telling the United States, hey, we are suspecting that you have an outbreak or waiting for the government to tell them that we have an outbreak, they can just declare it themselves. That Tedros guy, who is a bumbusser for the Communist Chinese Party, he can just unilaterally declare the United States has a health emergency. The contents of the proposed amendments were not made public till April the 12th. Of this year. The existing World Health Organization regulations provide for an 18-month grace period during which a nation may withdraw its yes vote for amendments. However, the current proposed amendments would reduce the opportunity to 6 months. 6 months. COVID-19 make it the last pandemic. A report published by the UN in May of 2021 claims that the pandemic would have been prevented if the World Health Organization had more global authority. The report states in its current form, the World Health Organization does not possess such powers. To move on with the treaty, the World Health Organization therefore needs to be empowered financially and politically. The treaty should possess an adaptable incentive regime, including sanctions, such as public reprimands, economic sanctions, or denial of benefits. On January 20th, 2021, so that's the day Biden was inaugurated, Joe Biden sent a letter to Antonio Guterres, who is the UN Secretary General and a member of the Portuguese Socialist Party, retracting President Donald Trump's withdrawal from the WHO. Biden also appointed El Falcho, the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, to represent the U.S. on the World Health Organization's Executive Committee. In March of 2020, the World Health Organization pushed democratic nations to implement lockdowns, mandates, vaccine passports, digital health surveillance, etc. In fact, the World Health Organization has developed guidance and even technical specifications for member states to adopt, quote, interoperable standards for COVID-19 vaccine passports. What this is, according to Liberty Council founder and chairman Matt Staver, the Biden administration has now set America up for ceding U.S. sovereignty, the health of United States Americans, to the World Health Organization. The proposed amendments would give the World Health Organization global jurisdiction over the United States, including the authority to declare a national emergency. Now, how serious a matter is this? I'll tell you how serious a matter this is. This is how serious a matter that this story is. And this is a huge point to look at here, folks. Okay, let me start with this. This is Scott Morrison, cut number, TJ, I'm going to go to cut number 35. Scott Morrison is running for re-election as the Australian Prime Minister. And this is Scott Morrison. He's all on board. Now, listen, he's going to speak with an Australian accent, so listen closely. You'll be able to make out what he's saying. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. Here is Scott Morrison.
I've always been supportive right from the outset and was criticised heavily, I stress, heavily, mocked, in fact, by the Labor Party for saying the WHO should have those powers and those authorities to be able to go and deal with pandemic situations, because we all know what happened at the start of this pandemic. The problem is we don't know what happened at the start of this pandemic, and I was the one calling to ensure that we had an independent process to understand what happened so it couldn't be repeated. So I have been in the vanguard of those moves internationally to ensure that there is greater protection for world health, to ensure that those world health authorities can come and understand what's going on and be able to assist countries to be able to prevent the spread and outbreak of major infectious diseases. Now, we'll look at the text of all of that, but we have been amongst the countries that have been positive about these sorts of changes. Have to look closely at what the detail is in these things, as you always must.
Do you remember the lockdowns in Australia? They were rivaled only by Shanghai. Do you remember when they were putting people in camps and not letting them go out of their houses and all that kind of stuff? They want to give that power to the World Health Organization. They want to give your sovereignty up. Every candidate that you run into that's running for a national office, Congress, Senate, you need to get them to commit to not ratify this till we have an open and honest debate in this country. And that'll never happen. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT, Brett Winterville. It's that time of the day when we cross the streams AM and PM, and we welcome back to the program Bo Thompson. How are you, Bo?
The afternoon after.
It is. It's the afternoon after. I mean, a really, really interesting night that played out before our eyes. I think like 6 weeks ago, we might have been surprised if somebody told us that Madison Cawthorn would be not be returning to that spot. Your takeaway is you kind of think about things one day removed.
Well, the more I look at what happened last night, especially with Madison Cawthorn, I think that's not a race where you can, black and white talk about the effect of President Trump. I think, if anything, you know, Pete Callender talked a lot about this, having spent a lot of time in that district and that excuse me, area of North Carolina. But if you look at the numbers, Madison Cawthorn was beaten by a small margin. But if you look at the votes, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but I mean it was about 1,300 votes that separated Edwards from Cawthorn.
Right,
1,300. And then if you look at the rest of the people in that race, and it was all a pretty crowded field. There were several people who had, you know, thousands of votes. And when you, I think even the last person, the last place person, had about 1,000 votes. So you realize, yes, Edwards won and Cawthorn came in two, but all those other people indicate that was a very, very fragmented district. And I think all the talk about loyalty and the fact that Cawthorn, you know, just months into his first term was talking about jumping ship, I think that was the real dividing force in this election for him. And, you know, I mean, if you take any of those also rans out, that's going to significantly alter the numbers. So I think if anything, his transgressions were a big deal, and, you know, President Trump's support was important for him getting what he got. But I think in the end, I really look at the fragmentation of it and think about, you know, maybe it was the fact that the constituent service and not so much you know, all the scandal.
You know, it's one of these things that's kind of interesting, because I think in a couple of weeks, people aren't necessarily going to be thinking about what's going on here. I think in a couple of weeks, people are going to be kind of sitting back and saying, all right, what's the picture for the economy? What's the picture for the border? What's the picture for these sorts of things? And I don't want to be disrespectful to the congressman or the soon to be former congressman. But, you know, when you become the story more than the constituents are your story, that's a big problem. Because you're not, as I mentioned earlier this morning, it's like the seriousness of purpose conversation, you know? I mean, what are you going to be a congressperson for?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And again, now I have the numbers pulled up in front of me. And so I think the big picture thing is that neither Chuck Edwards or Madison Cawthorn, I mean, this is not a mandate for either one of them. I mean, they were neck and neck, 33% for Edwards, 31% for Cawthorn. But you're talking about 29,000 to 28,000 votes. And then you've got the third place has 8,000, and then 6,000 in fourth place, and 5,000, 4,000. So every one of these candidates can say, I got a nice chunk of this. So you know, the case study of district number 11, there's a lot going on there. And, you know, fragmentation, I think that the further you get away from it, I mean, there'll be studies for years about the rise and fall of Cawthorn, and we can begin to talk about whether or not you think the guy ever has a shot again. I don't know. I tend to think that all things considered, it's going to be a while if there is anything. But it's not the first time. I mean, we just saw in Charlotte last night, Pat Cannon come in last.
Right, that's right.
We were talking on the show this morning about what's the thing that surprised you the most about the election. That's the one for me, because I'm not saying that I expected Pat Cannon to be the top vote getter. I think I thought Braxton Winston would be, but I did not expect him to come in dead last. And I think it's interesting, because despite all that you see happen in today's politics, I you know, I think there's an element of Charlotte that did not want to be associated with scandal at that degree. And maybe Pat Cannon, maybe it's a time thing, Brett. You never know. Maybe it's not enough time has passed. I think a lot of people were surprised that he jumped back in as soon as he did. But, you know, that'll be an interesting one to watch as we get further away from it. But one thing for sure is Charlotte was not ready to let him back in yet.
One of the things that I'm concerned about, and just looking at this picture sort of generally, and I'm not talking about North Carolina per se, but just people who are running for office. I get concerned when it feels like these people are now trying to just check another box in their career resume rather than actually wanting to serve the people of a constituency, a congressional district, a state with a Senate seat, running for vice president or president or any of that sort of stuff. And to me, it feels like we've gotten to a place of commodification, right? I mean, where this is becoming a commodity like anything else that you would trade. And I think that's a huge... I just think that's a big mistake for people to get excited. And the person I'm using and I'm thinking of is like Dr. Oz.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, I don't know what his positions are on anything. I mean, I know he's famous. I know he's well known. I know he's fabulously wealthy and he's a doctor. But like, I don't know what his position is on Chinese trade, nuclear weapons, Ukraine. Like, I don't know what any of that is. And I think, and people can say, well, you're not voting in Pennsylvania. Well, I'm not, but it also impacts every other state. And if you're just running because you're famous or you're endorsing him because he's famous, like, that just kind of bugs me.
Well, I mean, there's an element here of Donald Trump's rise to power. But what people forget about Donald Trump is that Donald Trump is a master of his brand. I mean, Donald
Absolutely.
Trump, the way that he did it, very few people will ever be able to replicate that, because say what you will about Trump, whatever side of the aisle you're on, but the guy understands branding, he understands marketing and self-awareness, and look, you know, you can't dispute the fact that he took that all the way from the top of that escalator to the White
Very
House.
Very true. Very true.
He knows
true.
What his brand is, and somebody like Dr. Oz is trying to do to a degree. I mean, I don't think there'd be a Dr. Oz running if Donald Trump had not done what he'd done.
Well, right, and there's no Dr. Oz if Oprah doesn't. I mean,
exactly.
He was affiliated with her for a while, so I mean,
but you flip it around, and for example, Pat McCrory.
Yes.
Pat McCrory is the ultimate example of starting from the bottom.
That's
and
right.
Going all the way up the ladder.
That's
right?
Exactly right.
I mean, he didn't win the U.S. Senate race last night, but to be a candidate as he was a governor. He was a mayor for all those terms.
For sure.
He also started at the district level for
That's
city
right.
council.
That's right.
And he and I talked a lot on his show during the years we were on together about, you know, those who start at the district level, which he's a huge proponent of.
Yep.
And then some people who try to make the jump. And, you know, mm-hmm. Marjorie Eastman tried to make the jump right into the Senate race.
That's right.
And while, you know, I think a lot of people thought she was well-spoken and had a compelling message, it's tough to break in at that level. And you saw some people last night. Larkin Eggleston was
yes.
trying to make the jump from district to at-large, and it didn't work out for him.
That's right.
It really, if you're going to make a jump at the level of even go straight to at-large and not serve district or
right.
go straight to the U.S. Senate or whatever it is or straight to Congress, there's always a risk. Very few people, I think, can convert can come straight out of nowhere.
So that's right.
You've got to have some sort of brand to build
that's
on.
Right.
And even then, very few people ever execute it the way Trump did.
Right. And it's, you know, people have said a million times, oh, you know, Ronald Reagan was an actor. He was also the governor of California, which is a pretty serious job.
Yeah, there was a ladder there.
For sure. All right, what do you got coming up on the show tomorrow, Bo?
Well, of course, more reaction to the election. If you didn't hear our conversation with Pat McCrory today on the show,
mm-hmm.
We will revisit a little bit of that. I mean, you know how long I was with him, and I've never interviewed him quite like that today. And he was, it was
compelling.
You know, raw Pat McCrory emotions the morning after a tough election. So we'll revisit some of that. We'll have, of course, David Chadwick on Thursdays, as always, and Bill Graham. And tomorrow is the beginning of the PGA Championship. So in the world of sports, Zoke will have all the information starting at 6 a.m. with Beth Troutman and me.
Great stuff. Bo Thompson, we'll talk soon, man. I appreciate it. News Talk 1110 993 WBT, Brett Winterble Show. Great to be here with you, and I'm happy to welcome to the program. Boy, did you have a busy night last night. Michael Whatley, North Carolina Republican Party Chair. Good to have you back on the program, my friend.
It's good to be back on the program, and like you said, we had a really great night, and Republicans are really very well positioned coming out of the primary to have a monster fall and a big set of elections that we should be able to carry in November.
So let me ask you, in terms of, I know that there's certain stuff that you're going to want to keep under wraps in terms of trends and things, but was there a trend line? Did you see anything that kind of stuck out to you in the state of North Carolina with the way turnout was happening or any of that sort of stuff?
Yeah, two things. First off, we saw that Republican turnout was much higher than it has been, and Democrat turnout much lower than it has been. And we think that tracks with the enthusiasm gap that we've talked about for most of the year so far. The second thing, which is really important, mm-hmm. is that unaffiliated voters in North Carolina are allowed to pull either a Republican ballot or a Democratic ballot, and statewide, unaffiliated voters by more than a 2-to-1 margin were pulling Republican ballots and voting in the Republican primaries. And it's so important because once they vote Republican in that primary, we're going to keep them for the general.
You know, that's very interesting because the perception is, well, unaffiliated means they don't like either of the parties. It just means that they want to be free to make a choice to who they want to affiliate with, right?
They really do. And we saw in 2018, which was our last midterm election, a 2-to-1 advantage where they were pulling Democratic tickets. So, you know, the group is definitely swinging from the left to the right. Mm-hmm. And in this particular election cycle, that's not a surprise because as Republicans, we have focused very intently on talking to voters about the issues that they care about. Mm-hmm. You know, the Republican agenda is we call it our family first agenda, and it's focused on economic security and educational opportunity. And there's nothing that voters care more about this cycle than the economy and their kids in school. And those are issues that we're talking about. Democrats are talking about anything but inflation, gas prices, and the economy right now.
As the commercial goes, I got to ask your reaction to what you saw take place in North Carolina 11 with Madison Cawthorn's situation.
Look, I will just say this. Chuck Edwards is a absolutely great candidate. He is going to be a great congressman from up there. He is a businessman. He is a solid, proven conservative. He's a serious legislator, and he is going to be a perfect fit up there. So I think, you know, and when we look again at the issues that the people in Western North Carolina care about,
sure.
He's going to be perfectly situated to carry that district.
So we got the AB here. So what about the Bud victory last night? I remember when you and I had a conversation, I think it was the day after President Trump endorsed Ted Budd at the at your gathering, and I think you came on in the very early hours of the morning when I was sitting in here on a Sunday, and you were kind of surprised that he made that decision that day. What about what happened last night?
Not surprised that Ted won. I think all the polls that we had seen indicated that he was going to have a really good night, but I don't think anybody would have predicted that he would approach 60%. I mean, that is an absolutely overwhelming mm-hmm. number. I think it shows that the entire Republican Party is united behind Ted and that he is definitely going to be the standard bearer for us as we go into this election cycle. I think that he, you know, uniquely was able to talk about the America First agenda that President Trump has put on the table and equate that back to what North Carolina folks care about, whether it's gas prices, inflation, you know, security at the southern border. His ability to be tough on China and Russia, you know, those are all things that he has been steadfast on. And I think just the overwhelming number that we saw with him approaching almost 60% is great because it shows we have a unified party. You know, we've got our convention, mm-hmm. state convention starts tomorrow.
Right.
And, you know, we're going to be focusing on rolling out all of our primary winners. You know, just being able to say that here is a long list of candidates
right.
that are focused on the issues that really matter here.
A lot of voter enthusiasm, a lot of enthusiasm on the base at your convention. Is there a particular issue or something that people ought to be looking out for as it's getting covered during the convention that's happening beginning tomorrow?
You know, the biggest thing that we've got is it really is an opportunity. You know, this is an accident of history mm-hmm. that the convention is 3 days after the primary. Thanks a lot to the Supreme Court for
right.
you know, resetting the primary date. But it works out perfectly for us because we're going to be able to come out of these elections. You know, we don't have any runoffs, which is healthy for us. And we do have a unified party. And we're going to be talking about family first. We're going to be talking about the economy. We're going to be talking about education. We're going to be talking about unity and teeing up the Republican Party to come out of it. We've got, you know, probably about 1,200 delegates and guests that are going to be on site in Greensboro.
Right.
And we're going to bring in every one of our you know, federal primary winners, plus our Council of State folks. And this is a launch, you know, really a good launch pad for the general election.
Michael Whatley is the chairman of the North Carolina Republican Party. You've got your convention starting up tomorrow. I wish you well with all that's going to be coming. It's going to be an exciting time to watch these races begin to unfold. And where do people go to get more information about the party?
Our website is nc.gop. And folks can get all the information that they need about the convention, about future events that we've got coming up, and contact information to reach out to us if they need anything at all.
Rest up. It's going to be a long fight, my friend.
Absolutely. No, we're so excited. And I think really, truly, coming out of the primaries, we feel like we are perfectly positioned to win this debate, particularly with the unaffiliated voters. And I was very happy to see that they are pulling twice as many Republican tickets as Democrats, and it's going to be a great campaign cycle.
Great stuff. Appreciate you being there. Safe travels, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Take care, sir.
You got it. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. It's the Brett Winterville Show. This is Mark Garrison.
Mm-hmm.
He is the host of Charlotte at 6, and we've got that coming up just about 6 o'clock.
Yeah, we do.
That was one heck of a show last night, by the way.
I'll tell you, we kicked it off at 6, and we're here late. You started at 10 o'clock last night. How late did you go?
11 o'clock.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
11 o'clock. It was, there were a lot of different stories and angles, and I thought you did a great job. I thought the whole team together was just gelling. It was awesome.
Election nights are always fun. Plus, we had pizza here, so there you go.
Oh, I didn't ask.
It's the
pizza.
Only time of year management will feed us.
You know what? The pizza is a win.
It's always a win.
So what do we got coming up on the big show today?
Well, we'll kind of continue. We'll look ahead to July. Mm-hmm. That is the general election for Charlotte City Council. Who's going to vote in the middle of the summer?
Yeah, well, you do a mail-in ballot from your house, I guess. Right?
Yeah, but the other question, just how far left will a new Charlotte City Council go? How anti-cop will it be? We'll talk about that.
That's good stuff. Yeah. Can I ask you one last question about
that?
Sure. Were you surprised at McFadden's re-election?
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got such name recognition.
Yeah.
Had he only had one opponent, namely Gina Hicks, maybe it would have been a little closer race. But he's well known, and so I really wasn't surprised. Now, he got a lot of last-minute publicity about what a mess the jail is in.
That's right.
And now the onus is on him to clean it up.
That's right. What else you got coming?
Well, speaking of cops, Charlotte cops getting advanced medical training for car wrecks and shootings.
Wow.
And the irony is, now they're really being taught if an officer shoots you, he then has to try to save you.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It is. 6:23, it's going to feel like about 110 degrees this Friday and Saturday.
Oh, no.
We have not had this kind of heat in May since the Beatles were cranking out hits in 1964.
Holy cow, that's before air conditioning was invented.
Pretty much.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is. And then at 6:35, we got a great story. We'll tell you about a Charlotte inventor who next month is going to be in the same Hall of Fame with Thomas Edison.
No kidding.
Yeah, this guy, you will be surprised at all the stuff Louis Forman has invented here, including a way to boil eggs so that you don't have to peel a shell.
Oh, I'm in.
Yeah.
That's outstanding.
Yeah.
Like an egginator. Is that what they call it? Is it called the Egginator?
Actually, it's called the Eggy.
The Eggy?
Yeah.
That sounds like an award you would get like at a 4-H
for a really bad show. Yeah. The Eggy goes to the worst performer. Yeah. But I'll tell you, this guy has invented a new way to get rid of head lice. I mean, it's just, I mean, the list of stuff.
Wait, so does invented. That, it gets rid of head lice and it cooks the egg?
No, that's a different, are two different inventions.
Oh, okay. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
It gets rid of giant eggs and little eggs. All right, my friend. Mark Harrison.
All right.
Charlotte at 6, mandatory listening. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. This is Jim. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
What's on your mind today,
sir? Watch out for being the eggy of the day.
Oh, no. Get the funeral music up going. No. It's okay. Go ahead. What do you got?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to the man that said, why do white poor people continue to vote for Republicans?
Oh, that was all the way back in hour one. Yes, go for it.
It'll be a good last word, I guarantee you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, people who are poor, who are in that cycle, that vote for Republicans, they generally don't believe that their solution is to throw away the system or wreck the system or destroy the system. Mm-hmm. They basically stand by the system and the tenets of 1776. And when you vote for Republicans, you are telling people that I still believe in this country. I believe in what it stands for, and I believe it still is the greatest hope for opportunity and prosperity that exists on the face of the planet. And the irony of it is that Democrats continue to try to convince their constituency that it's broke, the system is bad, it doesn't work for you. But they tell them to go line up and get their money and their support from the system that's broken. So if the system's broken, why would you stand there and wait for it to give you more money or give you more support?
Right. That's right. That's right. That's a great point. That's a great point. I think that's a really smart closing comment there, Jim. That was very well done.
Then I do get the eggy.
No, the eggy is not. The eggy wouldn't be that. The eggy is not for that. The eggy is for the peeling of the eggs as you're cooking them. I'm sorry.
I just want my chest filled with medals and ribbons from the Brett Winter Bowl show. I don't care what.
You, my friend, you're you know what you are. You're a prolific caller, and that should be a reward of its own.
Yes, I got that one right here.
Well, there you go.
Right here.
Right there.
Caller of the day ribbon.
There you go. You got you've been a caller of the day. All right, Jim, I appreciate you being out there. Thank you very much. All right. Did you know this? This is interesting. You see all these famous celebrities that are doing this and that to try to be relevant. Do you know that Tom Cruise has basically survived the whole notion of being a star? He hasn't lost the job. And do you know that he would not allow Top Gun Maverick to debut on streaming? He wanted it in a theater, and I think that's a cool call because that is paleo right there. That is paleo. That is old school, and that's how you do it if you want to be a star. Thank you to TJ. Thank you to Boomer. Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Anna. Thank you to Brett. Thank you to Bo. And thank you to you. Because of you, we get to do what we do. We'll do it again tomorrow, starting not at 2, but at 3. News Talk 1110-993-WBT. Pigs have won tonight. They can all sleep soundly. And everything is all right.